Good evening, everyone, to our PL committee meeting. Before we start with some announcements, this meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's room meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link provided on the packet. In the event there is a disruption of services which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. A reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak. Make sure your cameras are on and you are unmuted. When you're done with your item, please remute and turn off your camera. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item two. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. So a reminder to the public that are present today, if you're attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return to the to Ms. Kang to help expedite public comments. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I'll then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. And any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to SCV Water website. All right. So today we have Director Bronstein present, President Martin present, Director Kelly present virtually. We are missing Director Planback, and I believe Mr. Cole will not be here today due to the notification. Ms. Martin, will you present Mr. Cole for today's meeting? Okay. All right, so we'll start with Pledge of Allegiance. Director Bronstein, would you like to do the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice.
Thank you. All right, we're open up to public comment. Are there any members of the public in the boardroom that would like to make a comment? No? Anyone virtual attending?
There is no public comment at this time.
All right. Okay, so let's move to item number three, legislative consultant report. And we're going to start with BSA. Beth, go ahead.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight. I appreciate the opportunity to address everyone. August is typically a very slow month in Washington, D.C., as both the House and the Senate are back in their states and districts for their work periods. However, one item to bring to your attention. On Tuesday, President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act into law. Pertinent to SCV Water, the bill includes $4 billion for reclamation states to address droughts and drought mitigation. These funds are going to be provided to the Bureau of Reclamation. They are to be used for grants, contracts, and other financial arrangements for drought mitigation purposes. And these funds will be available to the agency until September the 30th, 2026. The three uses of the funds are for payments to farmers and other users of water to voluntarily reduce their water use, ecosystem and habitat restoration projects to address issues directly caused by drought, and then less pertinent to SCV water, conservation projects that achieve reductions in use or demand on Colorado River water supplies. What I've given you is basically all the details that I have on that text. There's not a lot of details that I can share since the legislative text was pretty succinct and there was no accompanying report or explanatory text that would typically establish congressional intent. The other thing, since this was likely to be considered a new program by the Bureau, this will probably take the agency many months just to issue the implementation guidance, much less begin providing funds to agencies like SCV Water. Shifting gears as a follow-up to last month's call, we provided thank you letters to the congressional delegation for the earmarks that have made it into the energy and water and agriculture spending bills. We sent a thank you note to Congressman Garcia for his work for securing $300,000 for Bouquet Canyon in the agriculture bill, and thank you letters to Senators Feinstein and Padilla for their inclusion of $50,000 for Arundo removal in the Santa Clara River watershed. In terms of wrapping up fiscal year 2023 work, since the House and Senate will only be in session for 11 days in September, and then they'll depart to run their reelection campaigns before the end of the month, they'll need to do what's called a continuing resolution to bridge from FY 2022 into FY 2023. And then we should see the results of those earmarks. Hopefully we'll see them in law before the end of the calendar year. We anticipate them getting a full year appropriations bill done sometime after Thanksgiving, but hopefully before the new year. And then lastly, on my agenda, again, slow month, but just so you hear it from me first, earlier this year, we applied for a Water Smart grant through the Bureau of Reclamation. The agency today announced the awards for that program. Unfortunately, our project was not included in that list of 25 projects. The list of 25 projects, it looked to be a lot of projects that have been in queue for many, many years, and there was a significant pent-up demand for this program. The good news is we do have a completed and approved Title 16 water recycling feasibility study in front of the agency, and we anticipate two more rounds over the next several years at this level of funding. We think the next NOFO, Notice of Funding Opportunity, will come out in January with a mid-March 2023 application deadline. The proposed Title 16 project that we were focusing on were on the two phases of the recycled water master plan, both of which would use recycled water from the Valencia water recycling plant. And at VSA, we are working right now to get a debrief from the Denver office of the Bureau of Reclamation so we can get a better understanding of this year's selection process with the goal of improving our chances and future opportunities. So we typically do this with unsuccessful applications, and we find that in the next round or next rounds, we often find success after we get this after action analysis. So with that, again, slow month this month with Congress being mostly out of session. Happy to take any questions you have for me, and thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Jeff. Before we have any of the committee members ask questions, are there any members of the public that have any questions? Any members of the public attending virtual? Okay. Directors. Dr. Bronski.
Hi, thank you so much. I just wanted to thank you for all the links and all the information that you put in there after I asked for it. So thank you very, very much. It was very informative. That's all. Thank you.
That was an oversight on my part on the last one. I apologize for that. And we'll continue to include links and other relevant materials for you guys. Thanks for catching that for us, though. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions? Dr. Martin.
Hi, Jeff. Good seeing you again. I'm just looking at the $50,000 number, and I'm just curious what we can actually do with $50,000 in Arundo removal. I mean, I appreciate the money. I mean, it's not like we're going to turn it down, but is that typically like that number? I mean, if you look at Arundo removal in our Santa Clara River, it's a huge and ongoing project.
That is a great question. And so the funds through which we are pursuing this action is under what's called section, for those scoring at home, it's section 206 of WERDA 1996. It's what we call a small ecosystem restoration project. And so that $50,000 will be cost shared 50-50 to initiate sort of the study and design of that small aquatic ecosystem restoration project. So we'll need to demonstrate that we're a good partner with the Corps of Engineers on this to kind of start the process on what is typically a much smaller. I think what we may find is in future years, we may need a larger feasibility study, which typically costs in the neighborhood of anywhere from $1.5 million to $3 million. And you end up with a much, much larger and more prolonged project. Sometimes these Corps of Engineers aquatic ecosystem restoration projects will take more than 10 to 15 years. If you look at some of the bigger aquatic ecosystem restoration projects that the Corps of Engineers is focused on, things like the Everglades, coastal Louisiana, they're in the multiple billions of dollars. I don't think we'll end up there. But I think this gets us in a good spot. You know, starting our work with the Corps of Engineers gets us more visibility with that agency. And the Corps of Engineers, they do good work. They really do. And so this is an interesting opportunity for us to pursue a Arundo removal. The other thing we're looking at just really quickly is there are other Arundo removal programs scattered throughout the federal portfolio. USDA has some small invasive species programs, as does the Bureau of Reclamation. So we'll be looking at some of these other programs in addition to what we're going to be doing with the Corps of Engineers.
Thank you. I have one more question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, President.
Yeah, in the next paragraph down on your page two, I just underlined Corps of Engineers to provide technical assistance to SCV Water to address volatile organic compound. What does it mean, technical assistance?
So that is not exactly what our request was. Our request was refining the law that was enacted in 1999 that authorized the Corps of Engineers to provide technical assistance for perchlorate. And I think I wasn't part of the team then, but I think what that was used for was some of the data and analysis that ultimately informed the construction of some of the treatment projects. And so with VOCs kind of being the next big ticket item for your guys' agenda, we asked that Congress authorize construction assistance, but Congress doesn't do a lot. I mean, we asked that Congress authorize construction assistance through the Corps of Engineers, but typically the Corps of Engineers doesn't carry out work for water quality projects. So I think the senators tried to compromise, knowing that they would have a hard time getting construction assistance for a water quality project. And they asked that the Corps of Engineers or authorize the Corps of Engineers to continue to provide technical assistance for the removal of VOCs. Again, will be some data, engineering, other planning activities.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff, a few questions. Going to page one of your report, the $60 billion in environmental justice provisions, and which will have new funding allocation of $550 million to the Bureau of Reclamation for disadvantaged communities. In terms of disadvantaged communities, does the agency identify disadvantaged communities, or does the federal government does? What qualifies as a disadvantaged community?
That's a great question. And I think because these are new authorities for the agency, they're going to have to establish when they issue the implementation guidance, sort of the definition of what exactly is a disadvantaged community. So we anticipate that's going to take a while. My guess is they will issue draft implementation guidance to the public for comment. We may want to consider providing comments to kind of help provide that guidance to the agency. And then they'll probably come out with the final implementation guidance, which will further clarify and define what a disadvantaged community is for this program.
Ms. Martin, the study by Kearns and West kind of identifies those communities in your report. Is that right?
we used the definition and the map for disadvantaged communities that I was just looking at because I knew you would ask this. But I think it was the one through EWR. Like that agency has a definition of, has a definition of disadvantaged communities where we can just look up on a map which ones fall within our community.
Okay. So as long as we can identify those communities, well, I mean, we have to determine what that community is. And, we'll be able to provide you with some notes on that, from that report, Jeff.
Yeah, and I think like Jeff indicated, different programs will have their own specific definition for disadvantage, how below a poverty level, and then whether it's a state or federal. So we'll have to wait for their guidelines to come out, but we do have a few agencies that we can turn to see what they are for those programs.
Okay, understood. And on page 2, EPA water cyber rule, Mr. Perez, I understand that we're ahead of the game regarding any kind of federal requirements on cybersecurity, and we will need anything from that's going to be mandated by EPA for water agencies.
Well, we would, yes.
Okay. All right.
We're looking forward to some rules.
Okay. Excellent. Jeff, do you get any feedback or any sort of summaries from IT department in regards to what we have currently in operation in terms of security?
I don't have anything. This is not something that we've done a lot of talking about. I do know that there are some other opportunities that are forthcoming from the Department of Energy related to cyber. So we will keep you guys informed of those opportunities. I think this is kind of the next horizon for the federal government, is providing funds for cybersecurity, particularly in the water space. You know, I've got a colleague at the firm. She's not part of this team, but she tracks a lot of these cyber grants. And I'll share with you sort of what she shares with us on the emerging notice of funding opportunities.
Okay. I think Mr. Perez and his team has done a phenomenal job with security. So we're going to be ahead of this, any rules that come our way. And last comment on page 3, the EPA PFAS strategic roadmap webinar, which I guess occurred yesterday. Will we get a brief from you on what occurred during this webinar?
We could provide one to you. I did have someone watching it, but she went out of town today and I didn't get a readout from her. So I knew you were going to ask that question. They usually post these a couple of days after the event. So when they get it posted, I'll take a look at it and I'll do a quick summary for the board, and you guys can review that. I think in terms of next steps, I think this fall, they're going to try to push out an announcement of a proposed rulemaking in terms of writing a national primary drinking water regulation for PFAS, again, sometime this fall. I think they were the agency was a little taken aback at how swift and how vocal the objections were to the public health advisories that were issued early this year. So it may take a little bit longer for them to push out the proposed rulemaking, but that's what we think is going to be the next step. That's what the president included in what he called his PFAS roadmap moving forward. So we'll be tracking that. But I'll get your readout on that webinar, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. And, you know, thank you again for drafting those letters. That was, you know, they were pretty good. No other questions from any members? Jeff, thank you for the report. Always enjoy hearing from you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to item 3.2. We'll hear a report from California Advocates, Mr. Alabiani and Mr. Molina.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Unfortunately, Dennis is unable to attend this evening due to a personal commitment with his family. So I will be giving the report this evening. I will try to be as thorough as possible and answer any questions you guys may have once we wrap up. So unlike Mr. Bowman, in Washington, D.C., California is at its peak time right now. We're in August, which is the end of the legislative session. As of the end of business today, we have 9 session business days left to complete all the business that's on both the Senate and Assembly floors. So roughly a total of about 1,100 bills is where we're at right now. Last week, we passed a major milestone deadline here. It's the final appropriations committee, which essentially is the fiscal committee where you're in the assembly and a bill has a fiscal threshold of $150,000 or more that has an impact of the state. You go to what's known as the suspense file. Vice versa in the Senate, if you have a fiscal threshold of $50,000, you go to the suspense file. It's really the state's last opportunity to provide checks and balances for what bills could be funded and implemented the following year. Additionally, this is a committee where there are some different political dynamics that take place where folks are protecting their caucuses and leadership for the upcoming election. So that being said, last week, there were roughly 491 bills on the suspense file in the Senate. About 368 of those bills got off the suspense file and moved to the Senate floor. And then vice versa in the Assembly, there were 292 bills in the Assembly Appropriations Committee on the suspense file and 213 bills passed to the Assembly floor. Roughly doing the numbers, it's about a 75% passage rate to the floor in both houses. With that being said, upon return from summer recess, we were anticipating a large rollout from the governor of remaining budget issues, specifically the climate and energy package that would really tie up loose ends in the end of the legislative session. Unfortunately, we have not seen any of that information to date. There's still a lot of backroom negotiations going on between the governor, his administration, and legislative leadership as things are progressing and moving forward. Specifically, there's a $1.4 billion earmark for drought and water resilience. Those details have yet to be rolled out. We're likely to see some sort of budget trailer bill language over the weekend is what we've been told. So as soon as we receive that, review that, go through it, we will be sending out notes to Santa Clarita Valley Water Leadership ASAP for folks to begin reviewing. That being said, the legislature does in session, like I mentioned earlier, on August 31st at midnight. They have a hard stop deadline at midnight, and then the governor will have about a month to sign bills. He has until midnight, the last day of September. Anything that is not acted upon by the governor, signed or vetoed, will automatically get a signature. That's just the rules we have here established in California. Once that takes place, everybody's going to shift focus very, very quickly to the November 8th general election. And that's where all the focus will be from there on out as folks get ready for their races. That being said, the report is not going to be as accurate as what I mentioned earlier, given the suspense file hearing that took place last week. So I'm going to provide some updates on some of the key bills the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency has taken positions on thus far this year. So going through the legislation, AB 2142 by Assemblymember Gabriel on turf replacement, gross income tax exclusion for local water agencies. This bill passed, no problems, no amendments, and is on the Senate floor. AB 2313 by Assemblymember Bloom, dealing with judges and allowing the Judicial Council to establish training and education for judges to complex water issues. This bill was held on suspense. Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency had a support. So this bill is no longer moving forward or active for the remainder of the year. The next bill, AB 2362 by Assemblymember Mullen, this bill would require the Natural Resources Agency to create an interagency working group to accelerate and streamline projects for ecosystem restoration. And then it also had a component to the bill where the state water board or regional water boards could accept donations in order to expedite some of these projects. Unfortunately, this bill was heavily gutted by the Appropriations Committee. They have the ability to mark up any bill to save cost savings to the state. This bill now only has the portion of the bill that will allow the state water board to accept donations or regional water boards for permitting or providing technical assistance for public projects. This bill, I'm not sure if the author is going to continue to move forward with this bill. I actually saw the amendments today for the first time. I sent in a note to find out if the author plans to move forward or if he's going to hold the bill for the remainder of the year, given that it was gutted pretty substantially in the Appropriations Committee. AB 2449, local agencies, teleconferences. This bill was amended a little bit this week by the author on the Senate floor. Everybody who is in support has remained in support to this bill. No real changes that would affect the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. And this bill is on third reading on the Senate floor. One bill that I do want to mention, SB 222 Dodd. This is really the last bill that's a big interest to a lot of water folks in Aqua. This is the bill that we've had several discussions on here in this POL committee, as well as independently with Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency leadership. The bill would establish the Water Affordability Assistance Fund at the State Treasury and help low-income and disadvantaged communities with affordability assistance for drinking water and wastewater services. So this bill has been very controversial. Folks wanted to have a specific fund in order for this bill in order to move forward. Last year, the bill was held on the assembly floor and moved to the inactive file. The author's office has done significant work with the administration looking to find a funding source, which is one of the amendments that have requested by folks who are opposed unless amended, which is the position of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. There is no funding source currently in the bill, so folks are remaining opposed unless amended. There also are some technical issues with the way once the bill does get funding, administration caps with how much should go to state agencies. A lot of the water agencies do not want to see funding be dispersed to multiple agencies without having a cap on it because they want the actual program to receive as many of the funds for low-income and disadvantaged community folks to receive these specific services. So with that, everybody has remained in the opposed unless amended position. It's my understanding and my conversation with Cindy Tuck from Aqua that the author's office has said we are no longer going to be amendments. This will be the bill that is in print, and this is what we're going to move forward with. So there's still several discussions. Folks are lobbying to try to put pressure on the senator because he has until next Thursday, if they are able to put enough pressure on him to amend it, to either ensure a funding source or take some of the technical cleanup that he needs to move forward. That being said, I'm going to move down into the budget category. As I mentioned earlier, the budget has already been passed this year within the California State Legislature. There have been two subsequent, what they call budget bill juniors, which essentially are amendments to the original budget deal. They update numbers based on revenue estimates and projections that come in from personal income tax and capital gains as things move forward. The state of California continues to have a pretty flush budget right now. So we're going to see a lot of programs continue to be funded at the levels they are, and we don't anticipate more than probably one more budget bill junior to roll out over the next 9 days, as I mentioned. And then additionally, right now, the governor's main priority focus right now has shifted, and we haven't seen, again, as I mentioned, the budget trailer bills on water, climate, energy, but he is heavily focused, we know, on keeping Diablo Canyon open, and he wants to use budget funds for that. So there's a little bit of a give and take with the legislature because they had funds specifically earmarked for different energy projects. So this is where the rub is right now, and that's where a lot of the focus is taking the attention of both the governor, his administration, and legislative leadership. We're hoping to see a deal or some sort of a deal brokered over the weekend. Again, we'll have more details likely within the next 2 or 3 days. Sorry about my dog barking in the background.
Sorry.
No problem. Okay. And then just moving forward, there's a couple of different things that have taken place in the regulatory space over the past month since we last met. The Department of Water Resources, they released their draft environmental impact report for the Delta Conveyance Project. This is being revisited by this governor. This was something that started with Governor Jerry Brown. When it started back with Jerry Brown, they wanted to do two different Delta tunnels to help with water conveyance. This governor has moved it down to one, and the draft environmental impact can be commented on all the way out until October, mid-October. The State Water Resources Control Board is putting out monthly updates for urban water use. It looks like California has moved in a better direction than they did in May. June was 7.6% lower than June of 2020. So we're slowly getting back on track with conserving water in the state of California. And then finally, we just wanted to note Keely Bosler, who was the governor's finance director, who plays a very integral role for his administration, has actually stepped down and is no longer the finance director. He has appointed a man by the name of Joe Steppenshaw, who is a great person. We have a very good relationship with him at our firm. He is the new director of finance, and he comes from the Senate Budget and Fiscal Committee. And with that, I am happy to take any questions on any of the updates I provided.
Okay. Before we go to directors, are there any public comments? There's none. All right. Directors, comments, questions? Mr. Martin?
Thanks, Anthony. You know, on that, your page, I guess the cover page of your report, the $1.465 billion, and I'll just quote, details have not been daylighted. You mentioned that. How is it at this late stage of the game that there's no details about the $1.465 billion? That just seems really strange.
It is extremely strange. To be frank, we anticipated that when they got the legislature got back from summer recess, as it's been done the past couple of years, where the budget has had a budget surplus, that they essentially roll out their trailer bills and have plans with how the funding is going to be spent. Again, the governor went back east and you know, made some pretty big political statements. The federal government rolled out a climate investment package, and then he shifted focus to focus on Diablo Canyon and some different energy priorities. And right now, you know, we wish we had more details on what's actually going on in the drought and water resilience space with 9 days left in the legislative session. So I'm sure somewhere there are some details. It's just that it has not been agreed upon between the legislature and the governor. Therefore, they will not release any information to the public until that agreement is finally cut. And just for historical context as well, during there used to be something called the Budget Conference Committee, where the deals would actually get cut and struck with a lot of public participation, advocacy participation from advocates like myself and Dennis. But that has switched since COVID. This has really turned into a leadership from the governor and both houses who negotiate these budgets. There's no more conference committee, or at least haven't been for the past 3 years, and they hash out all the details internally. So it's a very mundane process. It's also a process that we see things and then we have to react immediately. So it's going to be a challenging end of session if there's things in there that we don't agree with.
Thank you.
Director Plumbeck.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the Hurtado bill. It's in the inactive file, and that's the one where they're going to help pay for the canals to be re-elevated or whatever. So why did it not get, why isn't it inactive? What's going on with that? I'm just curious.
Thank you for the question. So last year on the issue of subsidence in the Central Valley, this bill was the vehicle that had the framework language of it. But there was also a budget augmentation that was passed last year through the Department of Water Resources. It was funded at $200 million. It was earmarked $100 million last year and $100 million this year. That has been approved for funding to help with that issue in the Central Valley. This bill was moved to the inactive file at the end of last year due to some hostile amendments that came out of the Assembly Appropriations Committee because the Assembly did not agree with some of the provisions in the bill. And given the fact that the budget funding had already been approved and went through, the author felt that there was not a need to continue moving forward with the legislation since the funding was already allocated. So with that, the Assembly member or the Senator put the bill on the inactive file in the Assembly, and that's where the bill has remained since then.
Is $200 million sufficient? Because at one point they were saying they needed $700 million.
That's,
is this going to fix the problem?
That is correct. So it's actually a three-party agreement. It's an agreement between the federal government, our legislature, and governor, as well as with the folks who are local in those groundwater sustainability agencies and districts. It's a three-party agreement that they're going to be splitting the cost for the repairs of subsidence in the Central Valley.
That's good, since they were the ones that did it.
Any other comments, questions? Director Bronski.
Hi. Thank you, first of all, so much. After last meeting, this new report has all the information that I asked for. So thank you so much. Understanding what we're looking for when we need it amended is a great help for me. And then another question about how things work. Once a bill is dead, is it dead, or can it be resurrected? As in, should we still be watching dead bills, or?
Very, very, very good question. I would say for dead bills, no. And I will, so the quick explanation is, especially at the end of the year, given where we're at right now, that would require what's known as what we call a jailbreak, where there would have several rule waivers. It would have to be an administration as well as a legislative agreement that, hey, we're going to resurrect this bill right now for X, Y, or Z reason. And there's an agreement that this is actually going down to the governor's desk. And that normally does not happen. The appropriation suspense committees don't like to do that because it sets precedent. If you do it for one bill, it's going to open the floodgates and folks are going to ask to do that for other bills. So when the bill is dead, it's normally dead for the remainder of the year. And it's not going to come back until bill introductions start the next year for the legislative session.
Okay, so it can come back the following year, but it's correct. Dead for this year. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Is it like, that's it? We're not doing it, but okay, now I understand. That's why we're watching it, because it might come back next correct. Year. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good question, Dr. Bronstein. Just to follow up on that, will it have the same number or will it be a different number for new year?
In a new year, it will have a completely different number. It may have the same title. It may have the same content, but it will have a completely different number unless the author somehow waits to put the bill jacket across the desk if they want that specific number again, which some folks do that in the legislature.
Okay, understood. On page 6 of your report, I believe so, or maybe not, maybe it's page 2. Anyway, regarding AB 2449. We've asked for a clarification. The way we operate, if for whatever reason internet is down, we cannot broadcast anymore, our meetings will still continue. Does that bill include that?
That is correct. So I checked in with the legislative director for the assembly member actually about a week ago. I was in their office and I asked them the question, and if power were to cut and the meeting continues, that is completely appropriate. There is no, from his direction to me, there is nothing that would require the meeting to have to stop until that is brought back up, as long as there's a quorum of the members present, as stated in the bill.
Thank you. Regarding AB 1157, this is the indoor residential water use restriction. Spoken with several water agencies and wholesalers, I mean, at least one, Western Water District. I believe, you know, they're California advocate, they're lobbying against it. And, you know, the reason being is, you know, going from 57 to 52 to 50 and then potentially 42, it could be detrimental to, you know, one issue is recycled water. And the other issue is public health. You know, we not necessarily want people to take less showers. No studies have been made, but that could potentially cause, some problems. Have you met with other advocates or other water agencies? What's their take on AB 1157 or any sort of measures like it?
So you are completely correct. There's a large coalition who are opposing the bill and looking to gather amendments to the bill. Dennis is actually leading on this bill. He's one of the leaders in our lobbying firm who has been speaking with folks on this. So I'm not as closely or intimate with this bill as I am with other bills. There are significant challenges with this. There's a lot of water agencies, as you mentioned, who are opposed to the measure. I believe that this is one of those that would have to be a leadership call at Santa Clarita Valley, along with the board, giving us some direction and to engage, and then we would engage once that direction is given. But at this time, we're still in a watch position, and there's still the opportunity for the author to take amendments, which my understanding is he has been communicating with several advocates in the process right now and maybe doing amendments on the floor next week.
Ms. Martin, what kind of directions did Mr. Cole or Mr. Stone gave to our California advocates regarding this this particular bill? What's the agency's leadership view on it?
I do not know. I'm not familiar with it right now.
We have Mr. Stone online.
Is he online?
Yes.
Mr. Stone, are you online?
All right. Give me a sec here.
Sure.
We are talking about the bill for remote meetings, correct?
No, this is AB 1157, indoor residential water use.
We're
going from, you know, I believe, well, originally it was 57 to 52 to 50, now 47, and now 42 gallons per daily capita.
Yeah, the last I recall, we had concerns about the validity of the data and the rapidity of the move. And I think that was sort of a coalition set of input to the bill. I'm not sure if that's been taken on board by the author and moderated, or if the bill's just going forward as is.
Are we providing any sort of studies to our California advocates to help the legislature understand that
this? No, my recollection is that there was a previous bill that had requested some work, but the work was not completed entirely. And then this subsequent bill rolled out despite that. And so the water community was concerned that it was sort of circumventing the intent of the prior effort to vet a study to get to a more well thought out number. And I think that's where it was. It's been a while since I've looked at it. We could also check in with Matt Dickens on that and see if he's got a fresher recollection.
Okay, understood.
So it's not so much that the agency would give that information as the, you know, the community around water conservation has done a lot of work. And I think the last bill was amended to hopefully direct some careful study towards this question before it was put in legislation. But then my understanding is we didn't get the complete process done before this bill came out. That's what I recall from an earlier update.
Okay, understood. Anthony, you mentioned that you need some direction from the board. Is that right?
Yes, if we're going to take a position, there would have to be done through leadership, is my understanding, and with the board. And
what is the timeline on the board giving you a position on this bill?
I think that would be up to the board's discretion and Mr. Stone and Mr. Cole's discretion. I would just reiterate that there are 9 days left of the legislative session at the moment, so. Would have to be a pretty quick turnaround.
So the two things I would look at are our own legislative principles to see whether it falls within one of those, which it may. And then the second would be where is AQUA on the bill, having given it some consideration.
All right, understood. Well, I mean, committee cannot take any position because we're not the board. We're just the committee. And you said there's 9 days left?
That is correct. The legislature wraps up legislative business for the year on August 31st, but the bill can be taken up at any time beginning Monday, moving forward through the end of the year.
What are the chances of this bill being voted on within the next 9 days?
It would have to be acted upon in the next 9 days. So unless the author decided that he did not have the sufficient number of votes to have this bill pass, it would then be moved to the inactive file, or he would actually try to take it up and it would get voted down. So those are the options. It's either pass, voted down, or inactive file.
Director Osahovsky, are we talking about 1157, right?
Correct.
Doesn't it say above it that... Oh, sorry.
That's 2157.
Yeah. I was like reading. I was like, the bill is dead. It says right above it. Okay, sorry. My bad.
Okay, well, Mr. Stone, as far as this committee is concerned, what can we do at this time?
I may have missed the thread here. Are you asking to take an action as a committee? Or are you asking for information? It's not clear to me what the question is.
The question is, as a committee, I don't think we can take a position. I mean, we can take a position and give it to the board, but the board will not meet within the next 9 days. So there's probably no action that we can take.
I think from a practical standpoint, the board adopts legislative policy principles each year that are updated. So as I said, the first place we would need to look is whether the bill runs afoul of any of those. And it is possible that it does. I don't have them committed to memory, but I believe there may be principles related to bills that would call for, you know, unreasonable conservation actions or something like that. We'd have to take a look at it. But I think as I understand it, the concern about the bill is that it's circumventing a previous piece of legislation that committed to completing a study that would be vetted before a proposal was made. So on its face, if that's the case, I think I would recommend opposing it. As you know, maybe it's the bad legislation principle, but there's enough of this going on these days that it's, you know, it's leading to poor policy making at a minimum. And it will have effects.
Okay, Mr. Stone, if we as a committee vote on whether to oppose it, will that be sufficient for California advocates to then oppose this bill, or do we have to take it to the board? Okay, understood.
This caught me off guard. I don't know. I would have to look at what AQUA's position is. I would have to look at our policy principles and see how it aligns. And I'd like to talk to Mr. Dickens because I think he's been involved in the discussions there.
Okay.
So all three of those data points would probably be just as relevant as the committee taking a position without any information.
Okay, understood. Thank you for the explanation, Mr. Stone.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry about that.
And if I may... Matt, please correct me if I'm wrong, the legislative policy that's been adopted, and I see a few on here where it would fit in and make sense for us to oppose this.
Right.
Also allows the staff the ability to do that. It doesn't have to go back to the board to take a position. If we can show it fits within our legislative policy, we have that general information from you, we get the data from Matt Dickens, we could direct Cal Advocates, you know, tomorrow or Monday to make that stand without needing further action.
It seems to me it's in Matt Dickens' calculations for conservation, though.
Yeah.
So it seems like a pretty big conflict for us to be opposing what he's using for calculations for conservation.
I don't agree. I don't think that's what he's using. I think he's using the formula that was put forth in previous legislation. This is going further than that.
Okay.
And that was the point, was there was an agreement that was memorialized in prior legislation, as I understand it, to complete a study that would guide where that number should actually go. And then that was sort of just thrown away by the administration and this was moved. So, you know, that's my understanding. I'm surprised we haven't taken an opposed position previously, because perhaps we were trying to work with the author with the coalition to avoid that.
Yeah, but I've attended the data summit yesterday and spoke with these two agencies that were doing the work, and that agency and agencies around it could not for the life of them meet anything below 50. And there's definitely a concern for public health. I mean, everyone's on board with conservation, but this does not take into account, water usage outside, agricultural use.
It doesn't even take into account extremely poor policy decision making on the part of state regulatory agencies that flush hundreds of thousands of acre feet down the river at the wrong time of the year. But I'll I'll just hold my tongue on that.
Right. Right. Okay. I mean, so
if you want to get precise, invest that money where it'll actually do some good in better stewardship of the resource on the regulatory end.
All right. So that having been said, if the committee agrees, we leave it up to the agency to review the policy, speak with Mr. Dickinson, and then offer a position to our California advocates, hopefully tomorrow or within the next 2-3 days. Dr. Kowalski?
I mean, yeah, and I would love to hear what they come back with.
Okay, agreed.
Fair enough. I appreciate that.
I don't see Director Kelly. Dr. Kelly, are you in agreement?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I had my phone, the computer wasn't working, so.
Okay, very well.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. One last question, Anthony, is that's on the regulatory aspect. Environmental impact report for the Delta Conveyance Project. I read the executive brief, no issues there. Will you or someone on your staff go over the entire document and give us an update?
We will review it and discuss with Matt and Steve and Kathy, and we will figure out how we can provide another summary, essentially, and review the document.
Okay. All right. That being said, any other comments, questions from the committee? Ms. Kane, does Derek Kelly have his raised?
Mm-hmm. He does not.
Okay. All right. Anthony, thanks for filling us in. Always a pleasure. Thank you for your report.
Thank you all. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Anthony. All right. We're moving on to item 3.3, a report from Hunt Braley. Hunt, go ahead.
Thank you, Peter. Good evening, everybody. Just to give a synopsis, obviously, on the key points. The Safe Clean Water Program Watershed Steering Committee gave a written report from the meeting in July. In August, we meet at the beginning of each month. More discussion on the transparency issue I've raised before, where the county has a policy of not posting either the video, which we've been doing now since COVID, or if we were meeting in person, the audio on the website for the program. There was clear consensus from the committee that they had to and needed to do that. So we authorized a letter to be written, which should have gone out this week, from our new chair to the county, and we'll make sure it gets to the supervisor as well. There's really no good reason for the county's policy. Apparently they use this for some of their other commissions, but their argument seems to be that it keeps people from participating in the public meetings, and therefore it's not positive. And we just had to point out to them the county board meetings, city council meetings are not only videotaped, they're on their websites, and you can go back and review them at any point in time. So that was one of the main things. Continued discussion about concern that the two projects we have in Pico Canyon will not be a good bang for our buck. The projects are going forward at this point in time. We're kind of pushing for more transparency on those projects. Potentially a field trip that would be available and get more information and see if there's some tweaking that can be done on those two projects. Our next meeting will be the first Thursday in September. The city council met on July 12th before they went on their six-week break, which they do every year. Major issues. They had to take some further action on the Desero annexation that did ultimately go to the Board of Supervisors. this month as well. Goes back to the council this month, and we'll go to LAFCO in September. Kind of the new twist, which you may have heard about in the public arena, that the county is transferring the historical site there, the adobe, to the city of Santa Clarita. And they want to do that at the same point in time they do the annexation. So that's being worked on this month and next. City approved the Eternal Valley Memorial Park expansion. Very little discussion on that. No public discussion. Only change was staff had requested a block wall between the new Needham Ranch Parkway that goes from New Hall Avenue up to Sierra Highway to a tubular that allows slats and wildlife to be able to go back and forth. And the council adopted that approach. And then at the last meeting, we had talked about two things. The city's historical surveys, which Kathy then provided to the committee, as you can find that on the city's website. Then we talked about the city's budget, and I indicated I would be getting the PowerPoint that the city manager used at the June meeting that approved the budget. And I provided that. That should be part of your package. This gives you a good idea of the extent and size of the city's budget, especially their capital improvement program. From an electoral point of view, the filing has closed for the city council. There are three seats up. I think I have it in front of me here. Let's see. I don't know where it went. I believe there's eight candidates, the three incumbents, Lorraine West, Bill Miranda, Marsha McLean, all filed. And I think there's another five candidates that are filed and will be on the ballot for November. You saw in Calvary Advocates' email or report that we do have two it's safe to say, highly contested legislative races in the Santa Clarita Valley, the first being for Congress, which is somewhat of a new district for Congressman Garcia, losing Simi Valley and gaining some more of the Antelope Valley. And then for Assemblywoman Valadares, her district now also loses Simi Valley and goes further south into the San Fernando Valley. So there's expectation that those seats will be hotly contested. There's a Board of Supervisors runoff for Sheila Kuehl's seat with Senator Bob Hertzberger and I apologize, I forget her name, a councilwoman from West Hollywood made the runoff. That will be hotly contested. One of the issues that will no longer be on the ballot, it appears, is the recall of the district attorney, George Cascon. It fell short about 45,000 signatures, although there seems to be some movement that signatures are going to be looked at. I would think that the margin is too large to see that change. There was some expectation that would impact voter turnout for November with a relatively lackluster top of the ticket, with no expectation that anyone's going to defeat Governor Newsom or Senator Padilla. But we'll see. Because we once again have an election where everyone will be mailed their ballot. And so it is certainly easier to vote now than it's ever been before. So we'll see whether that impacts turnout. And that concludes my report, Chairman.
Thank you, Hunt. Are there any public comments? Okay. There's none. All right. Directors, any questions? President Martin?
Hi, Hunt. Good to see you. Question on the Measure W steering committee, the process involved of actually getting projects constructed. Is it the steering committee's decision on which projects to do, or is it the county's decision based on the steering committee's input? And then secondly, if a project is approved, I expect that the county does the administration of the project. Is that correct?
Partially correct. So far we've had one city project and three county projects. So they basically come from either the city of Santa Clarita or the county of Los Angeles. The city project was a project at Hart Park. The first county project was up off of Hasley Canyon Park. And then we have these two new projects. There has been another project apparently submitted that we'll be looking at in the meetings ahead. We have to make a recommendation on these projects. They then go to a I believe it's called the steering committee. I could have that word wrong. That's kind of an oversight of all the various WASAs that has to make sure and looks at whether or not it meets the criteria and scores a significant point total to be able to be funded. And so there's really a two-pronged process, and then it would come back to us. And then if the project's in the city, they would be administering it. If it's in the county's administering it.
Right. So the project concept, who develops the concept for the project?
Well, there's a period of time where information goes out, where the request is made to, in this case, be both the city and the county to bring forward projects that would they think qualify and be helpful for the purposes of basically making sure that the water that's going back into the watershed is cleaner and being properly treated. So that's how the process works. I think one of the frustrations that the committee has seen is whether or not we're getting a bang of our buck, both in the quantity of water that's being cleaned and whether or not there's water that's being reclaimed that can help us with our water needs and the aquifer. So my expectation, that will be a continued discussion that we'll be having in the months, if not the years ahead.
Okay. Last question, if you don't mind. As far as the amount of money that's made available for this area for Measure W, is that a published number? Is that in a budget that the steering committee has and works with?
Yes, and so I can certainly provide more details at our next meeting about the history of how much has been not only raised from the Santa Clarita Valley, but how much has been at the disposal of the committee for its recommendations. There's also a return that goes to the city of Santa Clarita, I believe the county as well. So I've made a note and I'll make sure I get that information in my next report.
Thanks, Ed.
Any other questions or comments from directors? Hunt, last time we met, we asked you to give us a brief on county supervisors' meetings. Were there any within this month, or was it just not feasible to attend any of those meetings?
No, they'll. So, number one, they are still meeting virtually, believe it or not. The County Board of Supervisors continues not to meet in person. So their meetings are virtual meetings. I know some directors probably have had the experience of trying to participate in them. All the public comment is done at the beginning of the meetings, whether it's on a specific agenda item or just basically general comment. People are given 1 minute. Sometimes if they're talking about more item, 2 minutes. And then it goes to the discussion by the supervisors themselves on the various issues that are before them. Nothing really. I monitored the last meeting on August the 9th. Nothing of particular interest for the water agency, I think, was at that meeting. They did talk about the Tesoro issue, which I indicated, and they'll be off until September the 6th. Well, we'll continue to monitor them for any issues that might be of interest, and I apologize. I'll add that as an report going forward.
Okay. The meeting cannot be attended or for whatever reason it's not feasible or for whatever reasons meeting minutes are not available. Is it within your purview to maybe contact the field representative of Captain Barger's office and see if there's any issues related to water that are coming up or are on discussion?
And we have a good discussion with Stephanie English, the local field rep, along with Anish, the planning deputy, on a frequent basis. And so I'll add that. And again, these meetings are not only live, but they are recorded, and you can go online. And if you have 3 hours of free time, you can try to listen to them and fast forward through the mundane part and try to listen to the discussion. It is uncertain when they'll go back to in-person meetings. Supervisor Hahn was not at the last meeting. She had just come down with COVID. So that continues to be a sensitive issue at the county.
I understand. It's definitely takes a long time. But if you do have those discussions with Ms. English or any other field representative, it'll be nice to see that and report. And before I made that request, is there any objection on the committee for that request to take place?
No, but I do want to comment that one of the nice things about the Board of Supervisors is not only is it taped and you can go back and listen to it, but you can do a search on the transcript for words if you want to find out anything. So okay. It's pretty easy to just search for water. I have several words I use to search on items that are of interest to me. It's really very user-friendly, except this ridiculous public speaking where they don't allow you to speak on each agenda item. And I've said to the Board of Supervisors, you know, our water agency is very advanced. We allow people to speak on agenda items because it's crazy. It's like a fire hose. And I don't see how they can get anything out of it. They have 80 to 150 agenda items on every board meeting, and they take an hour and a half, and then everybody has a minute on each item and a minute on public comment, and it's just like, you know, for an hour and a half. I don't know how that's helpful at all. Yeah, I mean, it's very discouraging because some of the people that make comments, like in our own meetings, are very articulate and well-educated and can add to the knowledge of the supervisors, and you can't go down and meet with them. I mean, they don't want to hear from anybody else but your own supervisor. It's very difficult. And here they are with this massive budget and this, I don't know, sorry, I don't mean to go railing about this, but it is nice to be able to search on the words, but it doesn't do you much good when you can never speak to them.
Okay, noted. So in that case, Hunt, if you could speak with the field rep and get some discussion points on anything pertinent to our agency and our city and include that in your report.
I will do that, but I want to just follow with what Ms. Planbeck just said. You know, I share with her. I've been in this business a long time, decades. There's no way, in my opinion, that the members of the Board of Supervisors listen or focus on the comments for the hour and a half that they come in. And therefore, until they go back into live meetings again, you will not get good comments from knowledgeable people on items that are on the agenda that are action items. There's just no way that they're tracking it or listening. And then I hear that people are try to go on, can't get on, try to get on at 7 in the morning to be in the queue, aren't able to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just an extremely unfortunate process, especially considering what this agency does, the city of Santa Cruz does. It's frustrating.
Well, maybe if you're going to talk with Stephanie English, you might suggest, when I first started making comments at the Board of Supervisors, they had meetings twice a week, because they have a pretty massive agenda. But one of the problems is their agenda is so large that they have to go through it very quickly. So if there is anything that's on there that's of a concern, there's no time for discussion. There's no time for hearing the public. I don't know if the rest of you would support that, but I just think that that's, you know, it's multi-billion dollars and it's huge and we can't even participate. I feel like it's a dictatorship.
All right, noted, Dr. Plumbeck. I don't think we have any oversight over the county supervisors.
No, but if she's talking to him, maybe he could suggest that.
But a couple of bullet points on anything pertinent to the city and SCB Water on your next report will be helpful.
Will do.
Okay. Well, thank you for your report, and look forward to your report next month.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to item number 4, communications manager activities. Presented by our very own Captain Martin.
Thank you so much.
Item 4.1, social media quarterly report.
What I'll do is I'll just go through all these items at once. A couple of handouts or just things that I'll point out on some of them. This month, your packet does include our quarterly report. We do one every month, a short one. And then quarterly, we just go into a little bit more detail. It starts on page 103 of the PDF, or 97 of the packet. And so just a couple of highlights on our social media platforms. We continue to see just slow and steady growth. We do notice that anytime we put people in our posts, those are always the most well-received ones that get the most engagement. So Laura put a couple of examples of some posts we did this year, or this last month. For example, the one that has Tanya there, she attended a GIS, Esri GIS conference, and a project that she worked on was featured at that conference. So we shared that just to share the expertise that we have on our staff. The next page, we mentioned this last time, but now this campaign has come to a close. We did this Not a Drop to Waste drop campaign. So we have our own social media. Not a huge reach, and the platforms make it harder and harder to really get any kind of engagement. So we put some little money in there once in a while just to boost one of our posts. This was something that we had not done before. This was a larger investment with iHeartMedia. We spent about $40,000 total across several types of outlets. Social media posted did this post for us. We had streaming audio and radio. The numbers are there. The impressions through social media were 2 million. Just outrageous numbers. I don't even know how they measure the impressions. But when you dial down, when you look at reach and engagements, those are things that are a little bit more tangible. Of course, we want to know what came of this investment. It's a little bit challenging to put a direct outcome on some of these things because we have this campaign going on and we have, we might have a direct mail that went out at that time or print ads or just things that are happening in a lot of different areas. So one metric that I looked at was our website traffic because the thing that these all point to is droughtreadyscb.com. We want people to go there and find rebates and tips and resources that they can use. So before that campaign, we were averaging about 400 visits a week to Drought Ready SB. During that campaign, that jumped to 5,000 to 6,000 visits per week. In the weeks immediately after, it was about 1,400. And now in August, after the campaign has been over for a couple of weeks, we're still averaging about 1,000 per week visits. So we can attribute some of that to that people found us this way, as well as other ongoing campaigns. I would have to look to Matt Dickens and conservation for some specific numbers. I do know, like Anthony mentioned, about our usage, our conservation numbers are finally improving as ours are here. And I know there's been a big uptick in rebates, people calling and taking advantage of the rebates, the number of people applying for the lawn replacement program, all of those numbers have been increased. Again, it's hard to point to this specific thing that caused it, but it was definitely there in the mix.
Excellent. Did you say that we started at 400, 500 a week?
Yeah, right before the month before we did this iHeart campaign, we were about 400 or 500 a week visiting specifically droughtreadysCB.com.
And then it got to a few thousands?
5,000 to 6,000 a week for those.
I just wanted to make sure I heard it correctly.
Yes.
The right
400 zero. To 5,000 to 6,000. Mm-hmm. And now we are at about 1,000 to 1,200 per week.
I think brown lawns have helped with the lawns.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well, if we can't water our lawn, we might as well replace it.
Yes.
Anyways, and there's a page each time we pull out just a couple of our top posts for our engagement. We had a couple of water leaks, so those are always of interest to our audiences. I had one showing the crew working on it, and one we had some road closures. And then also, whenever we have job listings, that's, you know, the spark shows are people we share. I'm working on this on page 4 of that report. You can see that chart that has the purple and red on the left. So that is those impressions on social media. That's not our drought pictures, that's social media. And then if you look past June 6th, there's still a line there, like this big, but you can see like that's how big the jump was when we did this partnership with iHeartMedia. Before I go on, is there any questions about the social media report?
Okay, well, before we do that, we've got to open up to the public. Any questions from the public?
We
have no. Okay, questions, comments from directors?
I mean,
well, great work on partnering with this agency. What's the next step? Or are we going to repeat this with other campaigns, or are you looking at doing something a little bit different?
We're meeting this week, no, next week with a company that does billboards. And we've done billboards in the past. When we first merged and formed SCB Water, we did a series of billboards. Haven't really used them since. The locations in Santa Cruz Valley, some are okay. A lot of them are, you know, you get a brief glimpse before a tree blocks it.
Yep.
So we have a virtual meeting with her to see what the supply is right now. So we're always looking to just show up someplace new that the people might not have been expecting this. And then we are continuing to look at some digital options. There's some things out there now that none of us have experience with because they're just new. Things like social media influencers or geofencing the reach, although this iHeartMedia did that. They did it by zip codes. That's the only people that would see it. So we're always learning something new to try.
What's your vision for the billboard? What do you want to show on it?
It would probably also be partly driving into the website, but we would have to talk about that with the conservation team, like timing-wise, what's the high-level message that we want right at this point? Is it the watering days, or is it lawn replacement for September, October, November? Our big push in all of our digital print ads will be the lawn replacement program, because fall is the time to do that. That's the ideal time to tear out and replant.
And social influencers, how would that look? I'm curious. What's
weird? Somebody with spiky hair.
So a couple of these, we're just like dipping our toes in that. Metropolitan is doing one right now with an influencer where they have some band, which is funny. Matt Stone like knew of the band as soon as I said it. I've never heard of him. And you find an influencer that's kind of in your area and maybe has some tangential connection to the message you want. And there's a whole process in finding them, negotiating with them. You give them a lot of freedom in creating the content. So we're not sure that that's the way it would go, but we're researching that to see if we wanted to do that, how do we do that? Where do we find those influencers? Something else we're doing is we don't do very much video on our social media. We have some longer form videos, like some 30-second ones that we have on YouTube, and we place those on, it's on our YouTube channel, and then we place them on pre-roll where you'll see it come up when you're watching something else, or it'll come up in Spectrum, place in different places. But we want to do more of the reels and story version. That's what gets the engagement now on Facebook and Instagram, or those
TikTok.
Yeah.
Wait. So the reels that you're referring to, is it TikTok videos or?
It's like that. So you know when you go on
short form videos.
Yeah, just the short form, like when you go on.
And learn how to dance first.
Facebook, and there's all those stories at the top.
Okay.
Or the reels that are at the top. Those on the metrics, those are what get the most views. And we do some of our posts into that format, but we haven't created videos specifically for that. So tomorrow afternoon, we have convened this cross-departmental team. I put out a column said, in search of funny. I wanted anybody that was, you know, funny, witty, quirky, whatever. And so there's about 10 or 12 of us getting in together in this room tomorrow just to do a total brainstorm, like no idea, too crazy. Is there a video series? Are there themes we could do? And the goal, the topic is going to be like those three main things that are evergreen in drought and not in drought. It's, you know, checking for leaks, you know, adjusting your sprinkler timers, and I forget the third one. Oh, and preventing water waste, like runoff. So we want to come up with some just different creative ways to tell those three messages that we can use in all of these more trendy, hip formats.
Well, if you're looking for funny, at a recent conference, is Mr. Stone still online?
He is.
Okay, so I was informed that our general manager is a karaoke champion. Supposedly has a great voice.
So, you know what this tomorrow's meeting arose from was my monthly one-on-one with Matt, and I was telling him I had seen some presentations recently of what other agencies were doing. And I said I felt partly inspired and partly inadequate. I look at that and I'm like, why did we think of that? Why aren't we doing that? And then he and I ended up spending the rest of the hour just riffing on, like, oh, what if it was this? What if there was these, you know, a piece for each musical genre? We wrote a jingle. So we've had that whole conversation. Yeah, we might call on Matt and his guitar at some point.
All right, well, looking forward to what you'll have in store for next month. Okay, let's move to item 4.2, legislative tracking.
I don't have anything additional to say other than just on the form. I don't think we had any updates from the last one.
Okay. Any public comment?
There is none.
Any questions, comments from directors? Okay, very good. Moving to item 4.3, grant status report.
Same, I don't have one.
Any public comment?
There is none.
Questions, comments from directors?
Okay. I love the format. It makes it very clear to see what's going on.
Yes, Cheryl.
Thanks, Cheryl, for those.
Okay, I do have a question on page 106 of our board packet, unsuccessful applications. The Water Smart Water and Energy Efficiency Grant, the automated metering infrastructure, phase one, we did not get it. What was the reason why we did not get this one?
I don't know.
I was under the impression that all of our AMI grants were successful.
We got another one. I apologize. I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
I'm not involved in the preparation of this for tracking the grants.
Can we get an update on that on the next meeting? Maybe it was replaced with another grant, but I certainly was under the impression that all of our AMI grants did pass or were going to be, you know, approved. Okay, so that's it for that one. And we move on to 4.4, sponsorship tracking.
It's on this form that this is where Union and I keep track of what events and activities we are sponsors of, what we get for it, how much it costs, keeping within our budget for the year. And one of these kind of crosses over. We have a new new one added here, DWR's Cast for Kids event at Castaic Lake on October 1st. That is one of a handful of events that we're doing this fall season where we'll be out with out helping. So that one, we provide a lot of volunteers to that. Matt Stone will be serving as the MC again. It's his then for a few years. It's one of his favorite jobs he does as the GM here. And then we just provide some goodies and such. We have about 12 to 14 SCB Water staff that goes out that day and helps out with the effort. And that for anybody that doesn't know, that's for special needs and disadvantaged kids to have a day where they get to go out on a boat and fish. Really a touching event to watch. And then also coming up, we are going to have a booth at the JCI event, Adult Team 101, where we will be helping kids understand what water bills are and that they have to pay for water once they have their own place. We'll have a booth at the City of Santa Clarita River Rally. And we are working with the SCB Education Foundation, who is the new sponsor of the Touch a Truck event at Central Park each year. And we have participated with that in the past. It used to be a different charity that ran it, or who it was, and as well as the Literary Festival at New Hall Library. And that's it.
Thank you. Any public comments? Questions, comments from directors? And Bronski?
Ms. Martin, can you send us those dates in an email form of like what they are and what we're doing? Thank you.
I was thinking as I, Yanni, maybe we should add this, because we're not really sponsors at those events. Some we don't pay, some we pay a booth fee, but we could add just a like a calendar. So I put that in the section report.
That used to be an event calendar that we
used. I remember that we had a really long one that had everything for the whole year. But we can add that on here, maybe even just adding it to the bottom of the sponsorship thing where we'll just have a running list of the events that we have committed to participating in.
That would be great.
And then we can have the date and a link to that page for that event.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other comments, questions? Well, Ms. Martin, I'm thrilled that we're going to be in Cast for Kids and that we have 12 important staff volunteering for this event. I mean, seeing these kids, catch a fish and being there with their parents and on the boat, I mean, it is touching. This is in conjunction with the Departments of Parks and Rec and Friends of Castaic Lake. I think it's an incredible event. Yeah, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, our event coordinator Casey Gordon is actually on the main event committee, so she's in charge of helping find those 40 volunteers. So about a dozen come from here, and then she.
Please extend my thanks for that. That's absolutely phenomenal. One comment here for the Aqua Region 8, I believe that date has been changed. It's no longer August 12th.
Right, yes, you're right, September 19th.
You can update that. And yeah, no.
And a different location too.
It's in Boone. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, moving on to section 4.5, committee planning calendar for 2022-2023.
Yeah, we just keep a running list. I think October's gotten a little long. We may push one or two of those off to November. You need to have work on that.
Understood. Any public comments?
There's none.
Okay. Questions, comments from directors? Thank you for keeping us informed. All right. We move to item 5, adjournment. Thank you, staff, for this meeting and for coming always prepared. Definitely enjoy this committee. All right, and I join this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.